Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Shit. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a hilarious podcast. You love it. You know it. It's funny. It's great. It's wonderful. With me, your host, once again, late stage Marlon Brando.
And me, late stage Kevin Costner.
Ah, Kevin. Hello. How are you today?
I'm well. So I found out from a friend of mine that she loves, what is it? What is his show called?
Yellowstone.
And I was like, didn't you hate it?
Me?
Yeah. And then she was like, we love it. And we're watching one of the spinoffs now. And I'm like, there's spinoffs for this show?
A spinoff of Yellowstone? Really?
Yeah. But what is it even about? Like a dude who lives on a ranch? I feel like it's appealing to like libertarian types or something.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I also know somebody who likes Yellowstone a lot. And like, but so much. This person like doesn't talk a lot about other things that they like so much, but we'll go on and on about liking Yellowstone, and I can see them being a libertarian type.
Sure.
I don't know. It doesn't feel for me. It feels like a bunch of like rich whites complaining about how hard their lives are. Kind of like that movie that Kevin Costner was in. What was that? The Company Men?
Yes. But Kevin Costner played a blue collar guy in that one.
Right. It's not about just in terms of like how hard it is to be rich and white. It reminds me kind of Succession, but like with dungarees.
Yeah, sure, and Tommy Lee Jones being like, man, I have like $40 million in savings. I have a really hot mistress, but I'm still sad because my work is my identity.
Right. Oh, and The Company Men. Yes. Yeah. That movie's not for me, although there are a bunch of stars in it. Isn't Ben Affleck in that movie too, your favorite human being on earth?
Ugh, yes, he is. And he is fine in it. He is the whiniest of all the people in the show, though. He's like, I lost my job. We'll have to get rid of our summer home. And I'm going to have to learn to work construction and become humble.
Right. Yeah, that's a very strange movie. Is there anything going on with, since we're already talking about Ben Affleck, which feels like a little early in the game, but any Affleck-related dramas we need to be aware of this week?
Well, we know that their house cost $64 million.
I literally just did a spit take. I just drank some coffee when you said that and spit it out. How could that be?
I just think once you get to a point where you're like so rich, you probably do have trouble spending the money, you know? But like, I always wonder, I'm like, do you actually need, they don't like, how many kids do they have? Like possibly 5 altogether. So the most bedrooms they could possibly need would be 6.
Yeah, and I just, like, don't like a big house. I don't think it would matter how much money I have. I don't really like the idea of being in a really big house.
I know, but, like, if J-Lo and Ben had a party and, like, their house was just, like, a normal 7-bedroom, 2-story house, everyone would be like, what the fuck? You don't have a $64 million house? Like, I think they just have to, at some point, just do what everyone else is doing.
Yes. And you know what I find to be very interesting, folks? This is a good lesson about your good old friend capitalism. Ben Affleck, still miserable at the Grammys, still sucking down cigarettes. So it doesn't matter if you live in a $64 million house, can't buy happiness. Okay. I'm just going to leave that right there.
Yeah. Well, maybe he found out that it's going to cost $64 million to remove his tattoo. And he's like, I can't have the house and the tattoo removed.
Bacchiotomy?
Yeah. In order to get my back replaced, it costs just as much as our beautiful 45-bedroom mansion.
I just can't believe that this man is married to J-Lo and at this point hasn't gotten a new back. Like, he still has that same back with that same phoenix.
Also, like, the Kardashians have been, like, completely replaced. Their entire bodies have been ripped off and put onto new bodies. Why can't they do that to him?
Exactly. Just put his head on a better body with a better or no back tattoo, preferably.
Yeah, whichever one you can find.
Wow, what a guy. Ben Affleck. Amazing. I have some exciting news to share.
Tell me.
As of this airing, folks, I am the subject of this week's upcoming, you guessed it, New York Magazine's Grub Street Diet. Life goal achieved.
That's cool. I always wanted to do that. But then I'd be like,
I know, it's
just cool. Ordered a Taco Bell.
I know. I'm like really, so I'm so honored to be doing it. It's so, so fun. It's something I've always wanted to do. And it's also really funny because, like, you know, especially when when I'm working, right? Like, as I am right now doing the pop-up, like, you know, you come home from work and, like, some nights I have, like, ketchup and mustard on a lettuce leaf.
That's gross.
And that's not, it is gross. It is gross. You're right. It's completely stupid. Or, like, a tortilla chip dipped in butter. But
what?
Nobody really wants to hear that.
I don't want to hear that.
It sounds like disordered eating, but it's like not. It's just that I'm like so exhausted by food by the time I get home and then like during the day. So anyway, this is all to say, I'm making a real effort to pop out to some of like the places that I love. Some of these things are in my regular routine anyway, but it's really fun and I'm like so excited.
So you're saying it's going to be a lie.
I'm lying about everything. I'm talking about places I've never... So there I was at La Bernadan where I always go every day. I want some nice fresh fish.
Did you read the one about the guy who like just literally takes balls of chicken and puts them in a shake so he can get enough protein? Yeah. So I feel like
I'm just going to steal his.
Just be honest about, I don't know why you would put a tortilla chip in butter as opposed to any other condiment, but I want America to know about this.
And now they will. And, speaking of tortilla chips, so as I'm like recording everything that happens related to food in my life for this week, I was on the Long Island Railroad the other day because I brought my car to my mom's house because I just kept getting tickets. So I took the train out there to see her. And I witnessed a human man eating chips and salsa out of a jar on the train. And it occurred to me that this, you know, how we always talk about like, what's the worst food you can eat at the beach, movie theater. This may be the worst food you can eat on a moving train.
Why?
Because it's so drippy and dangerous and like, it's just like so open, like anything could fly into it. It just looked like so crazy, like delicious, right? Like no judgment about like the value of how good that is. But I was just like, anything could happen. The train jolts and all of a sudden there's salsa everywhere. It's an open jar of tomato.
Do the trains jolt that much though? I feel like it's just like being on an airplane, sort of.
Would you eat a jar of chips and salsa on a train?
Yeah.
Too liquidy. It like drips off. I can see like chips and guacamole. That's more sturdy. Too slippery.
Well, there's little tables, right? Or are there no tables? I don't ride there's no LIRR tables. Very often. Probably only like five times in my life.
There's no tables.
So he's just holding it balanced in his lap.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a little bit more risky. Was he wearing white pants?
Yeah, he was wearing an all white tuxedo, actually. And I was like, sir, you are pushing your luck here.
He's probably being filmed for a crazy TV show.
Yeah. And, you know, like part of me was really like, I admire so much about this man that he is not like in any way conscious about how strange this is at 9:30 in the morning. He's like, fuck it. I want chips and salsa for breakfast. I'm going to have that.
9 a.m.?
So I like that about
him. Yeah, well, maybe.
Yeah, I was at 9 a.m.
Just ran to the bodega and didn't have time for them to make him an egg and cheese.
Totally. And like, we shouldn't worry about what society says we should and shouldn't eat at what time of day. I just pictured salsa everywhere. But then I grabbed the crusty end off of Caputo's seeded loaf that I was bringing my mom and got like to eat some of it and got fucking crumbs everywhere. There's crumbs on the seat. There's crumbs on the floor. And then I was like, now the student becomes the teacher. Mm-hmm. Who am I to throw shade at someone? Look at what I've done.
Look at what you've done. And did you have a little vacuum on you? Did someone else had to vacuum that up?
Yeah, exactly. I just made a big mess. It's very embarrassing. Anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. And life is weird. Should we get into our topic for the week or do you have any other hot goss?
I just started watching a show that everyone was watching like a while ago. And everyone would be like,
Cheers.
You should watch this. No. And I would be like, no, I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't sound like my vibe. The picture on like the little, it's on HBO. So like the little picture that they show you of like, just like the tiny picture of the show, that did not, I didn't like that.
Sex in the City. And just like that.
No.
What was it? Tell us.
It's called Station 11.
I didn't watch that either.
But it's so good. It's like probably one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my God. That's such a huge statement.
It's really, it's just really interesting. It's based on a book that I like it so much. I'll probably read the book now, but, yeah, it's post-apocalyptic. I thought it was more like sci-fi based because of the name. But it's not at all. It just happens to be post-apocalyptic, but, that's the only part of it that's sci-fi. The rest of it is just more like human interaction based, but it's really, really nice. And Mackenzie Davis, who is the star, is an actor that I like kind of have not really, I'm learning to love her for some reason. The couple of stuff I saw her in when she was sort of becoming big, I did not like her, but yeah, she's great in it. And also Lori Petty's in it and I love her.
Oh my God, Tank Girl.
Yes.
4L.
So if you guys haven't watched it and you're looking for something to watch in this horrible early springtime when it was 75 degrees last week and now it's 21 degrees, I recommend it.
That's a good recommendation, but I will say that I cannot watch anything about an apocalypse because I think the reason is that I have no survival instinct. So like sure. Seeing other people being like, we got to get to higher ground. Like, come with me. Like, we'll hide in here. I'm like, this isn't for me. I would not do this. I would just be like, take me, like bury me with it. I don't want to live in a world where I can't like drink coffee and watch Seinfeld. And maybe that makes me seem like a prima donna. And maybe that's true, but that's me living my truth.
You're like a before Madonna type of person, like a 70s person.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. I'm pre-Madonna, whatever her last name. That's funny, huh? Good joking.
I'm making it joking.
Wow, you made it joking. That's funny joking.
Okay, so we decided to do baking because, yeah, I'm just not really at the top of my creativity right now, so suck it.
Oh, baking. I thought we were doing bacon.
Oh, well, that's good. After we did the pig episode, we're just doing regular bacon.
I'm doing the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, finally it will be explained.
I'm doing the 6 degrees of Kevin baking.
Kevin from Home Alone? Does he bake in that? You can just get pizza delivered.
It's like Kevin Costner, Kevin from Home Alone, like Kevin Hart.
Well,
I'm just tracing about all the things they bake.
Here's a good segue. If Kevin had an easy bake oven in Home Alone, he would be able to do some baking because 8 years old is the youngest you can possibly be in order to use my topic today, the easy bake oven.
Nice one.
Thank you. So yes, easy bake oven. Did you have one?
Yeah, I did.
I did too.
Obviously, I'm a chef.
Yes, obviously. That's an requirement, right?
All chefs had an easy bake oven.
Yeah, so we had one. I don't really remember much about it. A lot of things have been published about it, about how the cakes that would come out of it would be disgusting. But like, if you're like 8, you just like are excited that you're eating a cake. You don't really care what it tastes like.
Totally.
So the easy bake oven is actually not that interesting, but I'm going to try to make it as interesting as possible. Okay, people, bear with us. You're getting a lesson. So basically, even in the 1800s, there were tiny working child-size ovens, but they would usually be with, like, coal, you know, like
what?
1800s ovens. But they were like store models, apparently. So they would have them as like displays inside of a store, just like showing you, I guess, like a tiny little version of the oven that they want you to buy. But they were literally the size of children's things. And in the 1950s, there were these fiberglass insulated ovens that would heat up enough to cook stuff. They were called the Little Lady, the Little Aww. Chef, and
Aww.
Susie Homemaker. My favorite one.
So cute.
But the one that we all pretty much know about today, except for ghosts who remember the ones from the 50s, was made by a toy company called Kenner. And their whole thing, which sounds pretty interesting, I do know for a fact they no longer exist, but their whole thing was like having innovative toys and not just like making crap. So they wanted things mm-hmm. that were actually like working versions of like grown-up stuff. And they would have like a whole team of people that were just like coming up with crazy innovative ideas. And so as a result, there's no like one person who necessarily probably invented this thing. It was like a bunch of people working on a kind of like collection of ideas, but Norman Shapiro is credited with the guy. He was basically like saw pretzel making machines, which rely on light bulb heat. And he was like, I want to make a pretzel machine for children. And they were like, sure. And then they wanted to basically recreate the adult experience of cooking, but with kid items like cake and cookies, because kids hate non-cake and cookies, as we all know.
You can't just be like braising short ribs in the easy bake oven.
So they decided to go with the light bulb element, which I guess is what people also use in a toaster oven. I did not know that. I did not know that the easy bake oven was essentially a toaster oven. But yeah, they use a light bulb because, you know, they're marketing this to children. So they're like, don't give your kid a real oven because it'll burn itself or set the house on fire. This simple light bulb is extremely safe, but the light bulb did get up to 350 degrees inside.
Oh my God.
So it wasn't like, I don't know. It was all enclosed, I guess, but I'm like, that's really hot. And also
it's so hot.
Who amongst us hasn't burned the shit out of their hand on a light bulb? I have. It hurts.
Of course. That's too hot for little tiny hands. I'm assuming you're going to tell us about something like fires that were started with this, are
no,
you?
No, there weren't any. No one has ever harmed.
None.
Zero fires.
Oh, wow.
They must have been, they're probably all swept under the rug.
Covered up by big easy bake oven.
They struck it from the record. They originally wanted to call it the safety bake oven. And this is 1963. So it's very interesting to me that in 1963, the National Association of Broadcasters said, you can't call it the safety bake oven because it has no proven safety record. Right. I didn't even know people cared about safety in 1963. They're like, the entire National Association of Broadcasters are in a room smoking cigarettes and talking about how there's no proven safety record for this.
Right. And like going in their cars with no seatbelts or windshield wipers.
Totally. And having a drink while they're driving around. And they're drinking while pregnant. So they decided they had to rebrand it to the Easy Bake Oven, but they added on that there were built-in safety features, which is true. So like the thing, I don't know if you remember, I probably had the 80s version, but the 60s version didn't even really look like a stove. It was just like a little, you put this cake mix into a little slot and then it's completely enclosed. You can see it baking in there and then it like shoots out the other side when it's done. So that you're not actually interacting with the hot part. I think it was hard to access. Maybe even impossible, but yeah, so there were alleged built-in safety features. Who knows what they were? And they released it in 1963 in November, just in time for Christmas shopping season. They made 500,000 of them and they sold out literally immediately. People were fighting each other in the stores to get their hands on one. And they said that part of the reason that was so successful is because most activity toys at the time were for boys. So finally, there was an activity toy for chicks, even though it reinforced that they should keep all of their activities in the kitchen. Still, totally. If you're going to be Love active, it. You should be active in a productive kitchen-y way.
Yeah, be active baking something or cleaning something. I miss those days of like fist fights at toy stores though. That is something that we really lost, right? With the rise of technology, a good old fashioned, like, you know, trampling.
Nobody's fighting each other at the Amazon store to get something.
Maybe healthcare.
Oh yeah. That would be nice. And it also reminds me of that movie. What is it with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sinbad where they
Jingle All the Way.
Yeah. That's like, that wouldn't even happen now. We've lost so
much. Make America great again.
So people, the way that the cake mixes were packaged made it so that the cake mix would actually last for 2 years. They were in laminated aluminum foil. But they say that if you are buying a vintage version of this, you should not use the original cake mix because it's going to be disgusting. Because I guess there's a market for the vintage ones on eBay. And in 1967, Betty Crocker got involved and they did like a cross collaboration so that Betty Crocker actually made all of the cake mixes, including Rainbow Chip, which I did not know Rainbow Chip existed in 1967. I thought it was like a 2000s invention.
Right. It was made with like real paint chips though.
Yes, literally. I mean, the one I remember, the frosting was made with like wax pieces or something, but I still loved it so much.
Safety wax.
Yes. So as I said, Kenner, the innovative toy company, could not withstand the power of capitalism. And so Hasbro took over in the 90s. At that point, you could make a Pizza Hut pizza in your oven. You could make a My Little Pony cake. You could make a Scooby-Doo cake. You could decorate your cakes. Then in 2003, a dude started talking to all of the famous, just like the height of famous chefs, world famous chefs. And he made a little recipe book talking to all of them, including Bobby Flay, and asked them to create recipes for Easy Bake Ovens. Bobby Flay is a huge fan of the Easy Bake Oven, allegedly.
That's amazing. He made like a blue corn tortilla with like red pepper puree.
No, they did like a wild mushroom flan, a ham and spinach quiche in your Easy Bake Oven.
That's pretty cool. Good job, Bobby Flay.
So originally the Easy Bake Oven was obviously sort of chick marketed, but they did market it to both boys and girls. Obviously mostly girls were using it. But it was allegedly for both. But they thought they needed to go even more into the boy area. So they, in 2002, they came up with the Queasy Bake Oven for boys, because boys like gross stuff. So you could, in your Easy Bake Oven, make mud and crud, worms and bugs.
Crud? What is crud anyway?
It's similar to mud, I think.
Somebody please call into the show. Listener, please give us a report. What is crud mean to you?
Yeah, what does it mean to you? It just rhymes with mud, I think is it. So, and then sure. You could make drooly dog bones or delicious dirt. And all of these were, of course, just the same old cake mixes that the chicks were using. But they were marketed to gross people. but by 2012, they were back to pink and purple and mostly had only little girls on the boxes. And so a little girl herself wrote a letter campaign to have them make gender neutral Easy Bake Ovens, which they did. They made them black so that anyone can have one regardless of their gender.
Great.
And yeah, those are the ones on the shelves today. There's also a purple version, but the ones that you buy now are black or purple.
Nice.
Gender neutral, still kind of gross apparently with the things they're making, but yeah, that's the Easy Bake Oven history.
Wow, that is amazing. I like was kind of compelled while you were talking about this to think about a challenge of like only baking food in your Easy Bake Oven for like a whole week.
Yeah. I bet there's a YouTube video.
I have a lot of regret. I wish we had done this podcast earlier because I would have made that my Grub Street diet. I'm like, well, this week I'm only going to cook food in my Easy Bake Oven. Teeny tiny lasagna. I'll make all the food for the pop-up in the Easy Bake Oven.
Mm-hmm.
Small.
So the Grub Street diet always has like a drawing of the person, right? So who's going to draw? Mm-hmm. Do you have to send them in a likeness of yourself for them to draw?
I did. I sent in some reference photos. You know, the thing about the drawing for a Grub Street diet, they're so fun. I love them, but they do make everyone look kind of like unattractive. So mm-hmm. I'm just preparing myself mentally for how heinous I'm going to look.
You don't want to put that on your Tinder profile, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Should we take a quick break? And we will be back with some more riveting baking content. Hold on to your butts.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's. home of Heritage Radio Network, for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We're back. That was me gargling.
Yes, it was. Oh, wait, Sarah, before we get into this, I forgot something very important to talk about. I have Girl Scout cookies right now. I'm eating them. Here, this is the Do-Si-Dos, right?
Oh, yeah, the Do-Si-Do is nice.
Yeah, that's the peanut butter sandwich cookie, in case anyone's not familiar. But so when we were ordering these at work, there's new Girl Scout cookies out there. And
oh my God, really?
Yeah. So then one of them is called like Lemonade or Lemon Up. I can't remember. There's two lemon ones. One's Lemon Up, one's Lemonade. I can't remember which is which, but the one that I wanted was like a lemon sandwich cookie, which is like my favorite kind of a grandma cookie, you know?
Yeah.
And so the person who was placing the order, a lot of us got the lemon sandwich cookies, which we're very excited about. There's also something called Raspberry Rallies, but I don't care about them, but that's also sort of involved in this story. And so she texted some people that had ordered them, but not everyone. I don't know if it's because she doesn't have an iPhone. I don't know what the hell happened. But she only texted a couple of people, and the rest of us substituted the lemonade sandwich cookies for just like a plain lemon wafer cookie.
like the body of Christ, but make it lemony.
Yes. And so I was like, this is not what I want. And she's like, well, you can't actually get those lemonade sandwich cookies here. It's like, they're not real. And I'm like, yes, they are. They're on the Girl Scout website. So her interpretation of them not actually existing was it just that they're literally sold out in like the state of Indiana, along with the Raspberry Rallies. Like, you cannot find them anywhere in the state. You can't get them on the website. You can't do anything. They're like the Easy Bake Oven the first year that it was released. And I am furious with rage, but I got really mad at her. And so she traded me the chocolate covered peanut butter ones. I can't remember what those are called.
Are good. The tagalongs.
Yeah. Maybe? The tagalongs. So I have two peanut butter versions of Girl Scout cookies right now and no lemon wafers, which I heard from other people are terrible.
Wow. Well, that is quite the story.
I know. It's very exciting.
You survived that.
I know.
Honestly.
It was a big mess.
Yeah. That sounds like a debacle almost, actually. Maybe definitely more than a kerfuffle. I feel like this is a really good opportunity for our devoted listeners to go out there, find the lemonade sandwich cookies, and send them to Nicole. We'll put her home address on our Instagram.
And my social security number, just in case.
Yeah. Or just like your banking information in case maybe they just want to like give you the money to like go ahead and find
them. Oh, yeah. Like when people are like, it's my birthday, here's my Venmo.
Yes, exactly.
Great.
Exactly. Okay, great. So, folks, I'm sorry to break your hearts, but I was just kidding about the 6 degrees of Kevin baking. Although I do think that's very funny. I hope somebody takes that and runs with it who can do a better job than I.
Then I
am going to tell you something that I know you've all been dying to hear about. We've gotten a lot of like paper letters, lots of emails, text messages, carrier pigeons to the show saying, Zara, when are you going to talk about the wild and crazy history of baking powder?
Yeah. And people have been really, I feel like we've lost millions of listeners because we just haven't been able to find the right time to talk about it. You know, it is a very volatile subject.
Of course, people have a lot of feelings about baking powder. And so we've been nervous to broach the subject. However, today's the day. We're taking the leap. So I've gotten 100% of my information from an article called, you guessed it, The Wild and Crazy History of Baking Powder, the ongoing war over everybody's favorite leavening agent.
It's not my favorite.
No, it's nor is it mine. And my source today is myrecipes.com in an article by Shelby Pope, my favorite baking powder writer.
She is pretty good.
So Shelby says, she starts off by just letting us know a little bit about the importance of baking powder. She says, baking powder was a life-changing product for American women because if you were a woman in early America, your, quote, your worth was tied to the quality of your bread.
Is that true?
I mean, apparently. Is it still true? I hope not. Because I left a bread dough out the other night at a pop-up. And completely ruined it. And it was absolutely inedible the next day. We baked it just for fun, but it was essentially just like a bowling ball. this woman named Linda Citavello wrote a book called Baking Powder Wars, The Cutthroat Food Fight That Revolutionized Cooking. So intense, right?
Yes, very intense.
So Linda says, quote, women had these terrible pressures on them to make bread. You're not a good woman, not a good mother, not a good wife if you're not good at making bread.
Is this true?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm spraying. How could that be?
I mean, there's no way that everyone was good at making bread. I guess if you just did it all the time, because it's not actually that hard, is it? Nobody knows for sure.
No, it's not. It was daunting to me for years and years, but no, it's actually really not that hard. But like, this seems like a lot of pressure to put on people for just like something as simple as making bread.
Like, you are a bad mother because you don't know how to make bread. Fine, I'll take it.
Right. And like, obviously, this type of like messaging has carried through in a variety of different ways in like what we think stereotypical women are meant to act like, even in today's world. You know, I think like some of these kind of like really outdated feelings about women and their worth and what they're meant to do, like, you know, still carry on.
Also, I would say you're a bad mother if you are making bread because it takes so much time. So shouldn't you be devoting that time to like your children, your 85 children that you have, who's like the 1800s?
Right, exactly. Like watching them, making sure they're not like baking baked Alaska in there. Well, I guess you don't bake a baked Alaska in a little oven, but still, you know what I mean?
Yes.
The point indoors.
Their child side coal heated oven.
Exactly. So this author says, desperate for a leavening agent less finicky than yeast, these women turned to their medicine cabinets, which, like, thinking about this, like, why? Why would you turn to the medicine cabinet? What about, like, the medicine cabinet screams, this will be good in bread, right?
Yeah. Also, I didn't know that they replaced yeast with baking soda. And also, why was baking soda in their medicine cabinet?
Baking powder.
Oh, baking powder. Whatever.
Baking powder. We're talking about baking powder. It wasn't.
Is there even a difference?
There is, but I think that baking, I'm going to have to look this up, but baking powder and baking soda are essentially the same. Just one has like another little thing added to it. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. One of them you can make out of the other one if you don't have it, but I don't.
Exactly. Yeah. So they added smelling salts to their baked goods. They tried adding ammonia, but it's made all the bread smell like pee.
Sure.
And then in the 1700s, women discovered pearlash. That was made from burnt plant materials, and they, like, found out that that could leaven the food. Again, I just don't understand exactly why they were, like, using chemicals in the medicine cabinet instead. I don't know. It seems strange, but here we are. Mm. Pearlash simplified life and ushered in a new kind of, like, you know, American baking renaissance, like, things that are distinctly American, like muffins and cookies and stuff like that.
Yes.
Muffin tops.
Muffin tops.
Is where the muffin top craze began.
Amazing.
So this professor from Harvard, Eben Halsford, developed the first baking powder out of monocalcium phosphate. And he patented it, and he made it out of powdered mutton and beef bones.
Okay, so I'm like, was it made out of bones? Okay, great.
He combined it. Now this answers that question. This is where I heard this. He combined it with baking soda, producing the first leavener available in stores.
Hmm. What motivated him to do this? His wife was probably shitty at making bread.
Yeah, he's like, if this bitch doesn't make a good bread, she's going to be out on the street. I'll try anything. So anyway, he starts Rumford baking powder. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's like a lot of competition from, you guessed it, folks, Royal baking powder. Now, Royal baking powder is a real evil empire.
Is it made by the actual royalty?
Yes, exactly. It's made by the royal family. Now, we all are meant to think that not only do these people not have last names, but they also don't work. And that's not true. They started Royal Baking Powder. No, I'm just kidding. JK, Royal was willing to resort to vicious tactics to gain control of the market.
Yes.
So there was no regulation in, like, government, really. So they put aluminum in their baking powders.
Nice.
And they poisoned their customers.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Companies kind of, like, pushed back with, like, their own kind of, like, weird advertisements, because Royal had, like, Royal said that, like, aluminum was the reason why women are nervous, which I don't even understand what that really means. But,
so, but they wanted to make them more nervous?
Yeah, they're like, get more nervous and have, we need all these women to be nervous, so nervous that they won't be good at baking bread that they never stop trying.
Maybe, like, they meant that they're aluminum deficient, like they don't have enough aluminum in their bodies, and that's why they're nervous?
Right. That could be. Yeah, that's probably it. Okay, so Royal offers $1,000 to any customer that could prove their baking powder was altered. And they produce trading cards referencing the delicious meals made with baking powder and how much it's, like, it's saved. One of them, this is very awful, obviously. One of these trading cards was extremely racist and compared baking powder's efficiency to having your own enslaved person.
Oh, no.
So anyway, by the late 1800s, Americans are consuming 120 million pounds of baking powder every year, which sounds like a lot.
Especially because it's full of aluminum.
Exactly. It's very weird. And actually, you know what? It's not aluminum. I'm saying it wrong. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to do a retraction here. It is not aluminum. It's alum.
Oh, okay. Alum? Like an alum from a college?
Like an alumni. It was full of ground up alumni bones.
So alums probably do make women nervous because they're not allowed to go to college. They feel like inadequate.
That's true. Just like taunting everyone. They loved baking powder so much, these 1800s fuckers, that they... missionaries would go around to like Native American reservations and like push baking powder on them, which just like... why? You know what I mean? Haven't you done enough? You have to like make these people eat like poison baking powder. It's like so fucked.
But also, like, can you replace yeast in a bread recipe with baking powder? That's what I don't understand. Like,
no, you can't.
So how is it even helping anyone?
Well, they're both they're both leaveners, right? So here's like a thing. Maybe it's not for bread.
Okay.
But I guess like you don't want to like. I mean, it's easier to use baking powder in a cookie,
right?
Than yeast.
Totally.
Right? So I'm thinking that's why, for like quick breads and cookies. In 1899, the Missouri State Legislature bans the use of alum. What the fuck is alum? That's why I was saying aluminum. I thought it was a misprint. I was like, what is alum?
I don't know. Some chemical. It's probably on the periodic table.
Okay, great. So anyway, big baking powder starts bribing senators to like repeal this law and the regulation around baking powder.
I love it.
But there's a muckraking journalist in the mix here, and Royal funded advertisements the public found out about, like, through, okay, they didn't rely on the advertisements, like the muckraker, and they're like, you know what, we're going to do our own investigation, and the public finds out about the bribery, and the law is repealed in 1905, but Royal persists fighting new competitors like Calamite, whose baking powder is made up of ground up aluminum. This is now makes sense. Ground up aluminum cooking utensils.
What?
Yeah.
They ground up aluminum cooking utensils and sold it as a food product.
Exactly. and a Clabber girl who the KKK targeted for being owned by German Catholic family.
Did the KKK was not into German people? Or Catholics? Like
probably Catholics.
Or both? Okay.
Maybe. I think the Catholic thing might have been the part they didn't like. I don't really understand religion. So anyway, the baking powder wars end in 1920 when the companies are folded into large conglomerates. And today, Clabber Girl is like the leader in the market, which I've never even seen this brand.
I think I have seen it. Is that like a white label? I have no idea.
I don't know. I've only ever seen like Rumsford and like Arm & Hammer. The once powerful Royal is not really much of a competitor anymore. And what the issue of the baking powder wars really raised was like how much chemicals are in our food, which like, as we know from past episodes and like research that like, as we go along during the FDR years, there is some more like stringent regulation, like, you know, in terms of what can be put into food. And then, you know, your favorite president, Nixon, there's even more, but at this point it's pretty sketchy.
Yeah. They're just like putting like literal forks and knives into a grinder. And they're like, put this in your cake.
Like, there couldn't be a better way. You'd rather put a ground up knife into your like cupcake than yeast. How also, could it be?
An aluminum knife doesn't even seem like an ideal knife to me, but I don't know what it was like in the 1800s. So what do I know?
Everything is real fucked up back then. But so yeah, that's the riveting history of baking powder. I know you guys have all been waiting for it, and here it is. drink it in. Not too much. It's made of forks.
What is it made out of now?
Nobody knows.
It's not okay.
Yeah, nobody knows what it's made of. There was no way to find out.
Okay.
What do you think for our top three? Should we do top three favorite baked goods?
Okay. You have to go first, though.
Okay, great. I think my number three favorite baked good. Now, do we do we consider bread a baked good, or are we talking just pastries, like sweet?
I think all things that are baked.
All things that are baked count as baked goods. Okay, I'm going to go brownie, number three. Love a good brownie with a crackly top. Number two, chocolate chip cookie. And number one is kind of fringe, but I really love it. And it features my favorite ingredient and yours, baking powder, the scone, but only if it's good.
Yeah,
a scone, is easy to find.
Horribly wrong. Yeah. You can just never tell if it's going to be good. And then also, I'm I don't even want a scone. I want to have a biscuit or a muffin, but not both of them.
I love a scone.
I know you do.
I love a scone. And I want to give a quick shout out to Poppy's over here on DeGraw Street in Carroll Gardens. Best scone I've ever had.
Well, you can put that in your grocery diet. So, do you receive money from the restaurants that you mentioned in your grocery diet?
Yeah, everybody pays me $1,000, and then that's the only reason I'm going to go there. It's like really just for profit. I'm being bribed. I don't even like any of these places at all.
Amazing. Well, my favorite baked good is Baked Alaska.
Sick, bro.
And my least favorite is baked apples. I don't want to eat a baked apple. I don't want to eat a baked pear either. Okay, so don't fucking serve that shit to me at your house.
Fair enough.
Or do. I'm very polite. I'll just quietly eat it. And then I also like to – I do like chocolate chip cookies. Oh, well, I like snickerdoodles, actually, which uses cream of tartar. Is that a leavening agent?
No.
I don't know.
I think, more, right? Because it's a stabilizer. It stabilizes, like, egg whites. I don't know. Maybe
that's what it is. I don't know why snickerdoodles have to have cream of tartar in it, but it's annoying because I never have it, and I can never just randomly make snickerdoodles whenever I want. I know. My life is so hard.
That's rude. Sorry for your loss.
Yeah, and what I've been doing recently, which is totally weird, not weird, but it's not really what you would think of as a baked good, but I've been baking tortilla chips. So I take, you know, my little corn tortillas and cut them into cute triangles and make baked tortilla chips out of them. And they're delicious.
That's a great idea. You know what I do with a tortilla? This is another like eating behavior of mine that you're only going to hear on the pod. Actually, I'll probably put this in my Grub Street diet. I get tortillas, usually the Hermosa tortillas. If I can find them, the flour ones, they're so good. And I tear off a little piece. And I burn it a little bit over the on my range, and then I put a little bit of butter on it.
That's you and butter have an interesting relationship, which I was aware of before. I didn't know it involved tortilla chips, but I did know
any tortilla.
Sometimes you'll just put a spoon in there too and just eat some butter.
I love butter. Folks, this was a really exciting episode. Tune in next week for part two of baking. Just kidding. I could barely find something to talk about. Nicole's like, let's do baking. I'm like, great. This is going to be so easy. I was like, this is so fucking boring. I was going to do like Entenmann's. I was like, I can't find anything.
I know.
Well,
I tried to find something too. I'm like, the Easy Bake Oven is not interesting. You're welcome, people, for how much we care about you. and I just like to pick a large, broad topic because then we could literally talk about anything. I was literally Googling like, crazy baking history.
Me too. Exclamation point.
They're like, nope. There is nothing.
That's why next week we're finally going to get around to my topic that I've been wanting to do forever, World War One.
Yes, finally we're going
to We're doing it.
Getting back into the wars.
If you're just joining us, if you're new here because maybe you heard about the show on Grub Street Diet, next week you can look forward to World War One and then the Hundred Years War.
And if you have any of your own favorite wars you would like to, maybe like the Crimean War, like a more obscure war that we might not know sure. about, submit them.
Fringe wars.
Yeah, fringe wars. We're going to do them topic. All. Yeah.
Next week on Life's a Banquet, a food podcast on Heritage Radio, fringe wars.
And you.
All right. We love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Hasta la pasta.
Bye.
Life's a Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.